Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, or whatever time of the day you are listening to the podcast, which is obviously my stupid intro that I do every week when I remember to do it. Welcome back to Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends. This is episode 16, I think, and God, I hope it is, so it's not too bad. I'm joined today by my guest, Michael. You know what, Mick, I'm going to let you intro yourself. Who are you? What do you do?
My name is Mick Conlon. I am the
boxer. Not the boxer.
No, I am the boxer. This is what I look like out of camp. Someone actually said to me once, are you Mick Conlon the boxer? I was like, we can have a fight and you find out. I know. Who am I? Yeah, Mick Conlon, one half of the String Ninjas. If you've had the pleasure or the pain of listening to us, well, you'll know what the crack is. If you haven't, buckle up. Because this is going to be a wild 45 minutes.
Dead on. He's not going to play anything today, but because no. We're minus the other half of the duo.
The good one.
I'm
just the looks. He's the one with the talent.
Yeah, we're missing a musician here. We just have a violinist. One of the reasons I want to get you on the podcast, Mick, was because a lot of the times when I'm doing the podcast, the main point I want to do is I want to talk to people who are more interesting than me, which is most people. And what happens is I like to tie it into what I've been up to somehow or a bit of my past. Like, I had a filmmaker on the other week who I went to school with, who I used to help make wee videos when he was starting out. I have had comedians on who I've worked with for years, people from my hometown on. The reason I want to get you on is because I was a violin player too.
All right.
For a full year.
So you know the pain?
I know the pain of that noise it makes when you're not very good at it.
Do you know the initial scratch? That goes on for many, many years.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I loved the violin, and I was really happy that I learned to read music, but
because
I was handed it while I was in primary school.
I remember those days.
Now,
too scared to say no. You're like, all right, sir.
I definitely wasn't. I was too scared to say no. But the one thing was, the reason I quit was my teacher was a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
I had a court appointed, I'm assuming, music teacher. She used to work for the parole board, I believe. I had a teacher from the Southern Education Library Board,
right.
An English lady who wasn't very nice. I remember one time she slapped me in the arm and she was trying to teach me to hold the bow, which because of brainwashing and scarring, I still remember how to do. I still remember how to hold the violin bow, even though I haven't touched one in about 25 years.
Show me.
This does not make for good podcasting. So if I do this right, so is it those two, that one on top and that one at the back?
That's not a bad technique.
Close enough. Anyway, yeah. So this teacher was teaching me this, and I was taking my lessons at lunchtime, so I was looking out at the lads playing football.
Yeah.
And she slapped me in the arm, and I think this is a stupid question to ask a 9-year-old. She said, "Darren, do you want to learn to hold the violin bow, or do you want to go play football with your friends?"
Right, there you go.
And I remember just thinking, I'm going to give this back to you. So I lasted a full year.
Fair play.
I really enjoyed it. Oh, actually, I enjoyed playing it, but then it was just like, here, you're a horrible human.
Yeah.
And this was obviously in the 90s when they could, well, I was going to say when they could still slap you. They definitely couldn't, but they did. So.
Yeah, well, I never got slapped, but there were practices.
The threat of violence.
it's so funny. Like, kids these days, learning the violin definitely didn't learn. Like, for example, also bad for podcasting, but obviously when you hold a violin, a lot of kids, because you're afraid to drop the thing, so your natural intention is to sort of clench up, and you have a flat, you basically have your palm flat against the neck, which is bad for intonation, so you should always have your forearms almost like a right angle against the neck of the violin.
Okay.
And I had a teacher who is still teaching and shall remain nameless unless some watchdog wants to privately contact me. He used to get a blue tack and a pin and put it on the back of the neck so that if you're
hand drifted.
Hands to drift in, it would prick your wrist. So from the age of 8, I was introduced to self-harm. It wasn't a practice I continued. But do you know what I mean? But that was like, I look back at that and go, Jesus. To be fair, it was the 80s and it was Ardoin.
Fair enough.
Do you know, there were worse things going on. But, you know, Jesus Christ, that is...
It's a bit severe.
That is child cruelty. But to be fair, my technique did improve. So I mean, like, I'm now, you know, I'm a musician for a living, so he went, you know, he had the right idea.
I think what you just described it is you just described the violin player's version of a puppy getting its face rubbed in its own piss.
yes,
you know, the fucking next time.
Yes, that's it. Or when your mom catches you smoking when you're 12, or there's a whole packet.
Oh jeez, I was never a smoker, even though I'm now asthmatic. I was never a smoker, so that annoys me more.
I started smoking because I quit drinking.
Really?
And I went to uni and thought I'm drinking too much. Like, who goes to uni and has that epiphany? when I was like, oh, I'm drinking too much. I was like, no, I wasn't drinking too much. It was just too cheap.
Saying that, one of the boys from home did go to uni in Liverpool and came back with irreparable liver damage. So he's like, he was drinking decaf tea for a few years. He couldn't drink. He couldn't do nothing.
It's so funny looking back at uni and seeing, like, because you, I'll never forget, like, all these girls that would, you'd see in college and, like, oh my God, the most beautiful woman you've ever seen. Gave them one semester.
Yeah.
And they were, they were wrote off because they're, because they were like going to the bar and drinking. Where I used to live, I went to uni outside London, and there was a thing called Snake Pipe. So lager cider and blackcurrant.
Ugh.
I know. excuse me. But see, after one semester of drinking that 7 nights a week, you know, Jennifer Aniston would look, you know, rough.
She'd look like him and working on,
looking like Ross Noble, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, working on an oil rig with no protective gear.
That's it.
Jesus. So how long have you actually been playing for?
Well, so I played for, from the age of about 8 until I was 18, properly did the classical studies, played in orchestras, all the grades, things I got there. Then, but when I was 17, I got tendonitis. I still have it in my left wrist. So I had, like, I always had dreams, like Royal Academy of Music and things like that there. But to do a performance degree in an environment like that, you're talking 6, 7, 8 hours a day of playing. And I couldn't manage 15 minutes because just the pain I would have my wrist. So I just really knocked it in the head. Went to uni, did a music-related degree, and then realised I was wasting my time. Got a job in a bar. Worked my way. I just did that typical Irish man goes to London thing. Gets a job in a bar. And then, so I basically took about 12 years off.
Wow.
And then about 6 years ago, I don't know, am I home? I think it was about 6 years ago, so I maybe 7 years. I actually had a girlfriend whose uncle had a violin that was needing repaired, and I actually happened to say, "Oh, I was like, oh, I can fix that for you." And they're like, "How?" I was like, "Oh, I used to play," so I sort of the violin for him, and then I tried to play it, and it was one of those things. All the muscle memory was gone.
Yeah.
But I was like, I still kind of knew what I was doing, so I was like, "Do you mind if I borrow this for a couple of days?" Sort of curiosity, borrowed it.
The
few days, and then I was like, oh, I started to remember all things I used to do, and basically made a video of myself stuck up on YouTube for reasons I have no idea. And then I got contacted by a guy who had a band here. It's like a horse lips kind of a vibe, and he seen me playing. He's like, oh, do you want to play in our band? I need a lead guitarist. And I was like, I don't play guitar. He went, yeah, but I want you to do that. What you, because he's like, yeah, you're classical. I was like, oh, I'm a classical violinist. He's like, well, if you can do that, but like lead guitar,
you can solo,
way, that kind of way, you know. And I was like, all right, okay. So play with them for a few years, did an album and everything. Never went anywhere, really. Left for because of artistic differences, isn't it always the way? And then it was a couple of years ago. Do you know what? It'll be 2 years. No, it'll be 3 years almost to the day on Saturday or Sunday where, through my dad, a surprise birthday party, employed my mate Gavin to play guitar as like sort of a dinner background music kind of a thing. And my mum was like, you better bring your violin, your daddy's gonna want a tune. So I brought my violin. I'd paid Gavin to play for like 3 hours at the dinner. I ended up jamming with him for two of them.
Right.
And then afterwards,
we need an arty, like,
well, is it? And then after that, we were like, actually, there's a wee bit of chemistry here musically. Should we try and do something? So we met up a couple of times, trying to work out a couple of covers, and then went and did a few open mics, and then that was it, really. And then I quit my job about a year and a half ago.
Fair play. Let's do this.
Quit my job with no gigs. I just went. I had like one or two sort of regular gigs, but that wouldn't have been enough to justify giving up a full time job.
Well, hunger's a great motivator.
Aye, but it so happens that the day I quit, I ended up getting two more like sort of residency offers, and I was like, all right, well, that worked out, didn't it?
Yeah.
So it basically just went, well, I'm dropping this, and but this is all coming in, so it basically worked out the same amount of money, just a much more enjoyable way to get it.
So the String Ninjas, where are your residencies? Do you have any at the minute?
Yeah, so Wednesday nights, it'll be starting up again actually next week. Just because of refurb in January. The Argyle, every Wednesday, about 9. If the football's on, it's 10.
Nice.
It's a shame Liverpool have been so successful because they're the only team anybody seems to support. If they weren't doing well, nobody would be in the Argo watching football on a Wednesday. Then Saturdays we play in Babel, the rooftop of Bullet Hotel at 6, and then the John Hewitt, which was our first ever residency. It's every Saturday at 10, and that's probably the best place to catch us.
Because that's where I've seen you.
The crowd's always on point. It's the loudest we can be. It's the most crack we can have. There's no kids at it. Sometimes, like, if we play in Babel, there'll be kids around, so you're like, all right, you have to give them Baby Shark and stuff like that there. Yeah. And, you know, whereas you get, you know, get to the job, you just like take all the drugs in this record place. That's a lie, obviously. There's no drug.
Yeah, thing. Nobody's taking drugs.
Not by us anyway. If they're doing it themselves, that's their own business.
That happens to me sometimes. Where you're like, I'm going to tell a joke and be funny, and then you're like, I've just massive implications for what I've said there.
I know. Because that's the thing as well. Because we're instrumental. There's no singing at all. So just to keep that engagement with the audience, you do have to talk. So we do talk, and, you know, We don't tell jokes, but, you know, you try and be a bit funny and stuff to keep people engaged. And there's sometimes you say stuff and it's like, it does, you're like, yeah, I shouldn't say like that. I know, sometimes you just can't help yourself. It's like,
it happens in comedy. You get hyped up and then you're in the moment and then you're like, oh, what to say that for? That was going so well.
I know. I said a bit of Christmas there. We were doing a mashup of Walking in the Air from The Snowman with the Kinks, Lazing on a Sunny Afternoon.
Oh, tune.
But they're both in the same key and yeah, they're both similar tempo. And I was like, oh yeah, it works well together. So we were playing the two together, and when we finished playing it, people are clapping. I was like, oh, thank you very much, folks. That was The Snowman, Lazing on a Sunny Afternoon. And incidentally, do you know what happened to The Snowman when he lazed on a sunny afternoon? He died. And that's what Christmas is all about. And there was a woman in the front row, and her jaw. Gavin looked at me, and he's like, "Are you for real? Like,
yeah.
Are you?" And there was a time where I wasn't allowed a microphone for the things I used to say,
yeah,
because, you know, I forget where I am sometimes. Like, I'm in a room full of adults. We're all drinking. So how do you circumcise a Catholic priest? And he's like, "No."
Oh! Yeah, yeah.
Incidentally, slap the altar boy in the head.
Yeah,
that's the answer.
Nice one, Buzzkill. Fuck up. Shut up, play your violin, you.
I know what we lack in musical ability, make up for our comedic chops.
Exactly. Yeah. No, the the sort of violin player in a rock band is something I just remember from my teenage years. It used to be a band, sort of like a punky outfit from California called Yellow Card.
Oh yeah.
And they had the violin player, and he would play lead parts.
Mm.
So they had a guitar player, so obviously he was very busy singing and playing guitar, rhythm. Yeah. And then all the lead parts were to the violin. I was like, oh, that's quite cool.
Yeah,
it's the first time I heard a riff on a violin.
Yeah, I enjoy playing that because I play with a pedal board, so I don't sound like a violin if I don't want to. You know, yeah. I could do all that Jimi Hendrix and Slash stuff because I've got the classical technique. I mean, if you gave me a guitar, I couldn't do that. But because I've got the technique on a violin, it's great. More often, 9 times out of 10, I could play any solo. There's some stuff that I just can't play because it's written for guitar. And yeah, guitar, obviously, different strings and the way it's written. There's some stuff you can play on a guitar. Anyone who plays guitar, you can see guys doing solos on one string, but that's because, well,
that's
just the way it's written. But yeah, on a violin, if you try and do that on a violin, you're having to cross, and there's things, sometimes it just doesn't translate it well. But no, I always have fun with it. And it is funny. I do love going to work and people saying, oh, violin guitar, here we go, a wee folk group. And then we plug in and the first thing you hear is Sandstorm by Darude. And they're like, yeah, what? Where did that come from? So I enjoy that, the shock factor, you know, it is very different. Apparently we've spawned a couple of tribute acts now in Belfast. There's a few violin guitar duos happening now. So
it is.
I don't know who these people are. There's only one other violin guitar duo I know of, and that's in the Nine Inch Nails. And they existed before we did. And actually, the violinist, his dad was my first ever violin teacher.
Really?
Well. So like, there's no animosity there. Like, I actually remember that kid being born. But ourselves, as two different duos, we're very different in the way we play. Like, we don't steal each other's gigs or nothing like that there. But there's a lot of imposters, I think.
That'd be very people funny.
People text me going, oh, there's someone playing the violin. They've stole your set. I'm like, good luck to them. Do you know what? There's plenty of work for everybody.
That'd be funny because that'd be like me going, hey, is some bastard telling jokes in this
fucking place? I know, it's
fine.
The way it is, it's like, I remember, I mean, 5 years ago you'd said to me, every bar in Belfast is going to have live music 7 nights a week, and I said, you're mental. And now, that's what's happening.
Well, that's good.
That's the thing, so you can never be jealous, and then it's like, it's also, it pushes you a wee bit too, because you know, you can maybe get a wee bit lackadaisical, but it basically makes us go, shit, actually, maybe we need to step our game up and just be better, which is good for everybody, because ultimately the customer is the one who's benefiting.
Musically speaking yourself, because obviously when yourself and Gavin play, there must be, is it there's wildly different influences, or you're, because I mean, or like, we traditionally speaking, were you a rocker, were you into your classical, were you?
No, I was very, as a kid, very classical focused, but that's what I was studying, and so that's, and the school I went, actually the school I went to, anything outside of classical music in the music department was not encouraged. I remember, I think I was 16, and I wanted to learn piano, but I didn't have time for lessons. I was too busy. I was already learning the violin. I was at school doing GCSEs. I was in two orchestras and a choir, and just wasn't enough time. So I was trying to learn piano in spare time if I had it. And Bohemian Rhapsody was the song I always wanted to learn to play. So I got the sheet music for Bohemian Rhapsody, and I was sitting in a practice room playing it on the piano. And the head of music came into the practice room and screamed at me because I wasn't playing classical music. And you know, on a piano, you've got the lid for the keys. He slammed the lid. Like, I got my fingers out of the way, clearly. But he was like, no, you shan't play. He was a priest as well. So he had that Father Jack vibe about him.
See, it's number one, you shall not play rock and roll for the devil's music. And number two, Freddie Mercury was one of the gays. So,
I know. And do you know the thing as well? I'll never forget, like, one of the most famous operas of all time is Carmina Burana by Carl Orff. Is it Carl Orff? And that's actually the theme tune from The Omen.
Yeah.
And he would never allow us to listen to that opera. And I'm like, if you let us, there's things we can take away from it. We can learn about, you know, theme and variation. There's loads of different, you know, how did he modulate from that key to that, you know, there's things to be learned from it. Is instead of, you know, we're not really worried about the devil worshipping thing, but that was like, actually also comic relief wasn't allowed. You weren't allowed to wear your, because it encouraged the use of contraception. He's like, let them have their AIDS. You're like, Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah, that's old school. That is, I know. That's full on fire and brimstone.
I know. That's
there's a man who's never
had. Anybody who knows me who's listening to this will know who I'm talking about. I'm not going to say who.
Fair enough,
but you know what I mean. But
what school was this? Are you allowed to legally educate yourself for this?
I went to St Malachy's in North Belfast.
St Malachy's, I think.
On the Alton Road, yeah.
I think Terry McHugh went there, did he?
I think he did. Maybe loads of famous past people. Martin O'Neill famously went there. Eamon Holmes went there. He was a knob when I met him. I didn't like him.
Eamon Holmes?
If you're listening to Eamon.
Have a shave
and do up your top button, would you? Who else? There was Bill Neely. Remember the ITN?
Yeah.
I think he went as well. There's quite a few. I'll probably, when we finish this, I'll probably remember like a list of 20. But I always remember like pictures on the wall of like famous past people, so.
Any famous past people in my school? John and Susan Lynch, who are they're actors. John was in The Name of the Father. He plays one of the Guildford Four.
That's so funny.
And
that film really is close to my heart. When I remember the first,
it's fucking close up the road from where your man's from.
Well, do you know what the thing is though? Because my surname is Conlon, so whatever. Incidentally, we're not related. Well, there is probably, like, it's one of those ones. If you shout Conlon in West Belfast, half a street will turn around. You know what I mean? But no, my dad, I think there is some kind of connection to Jerry there, but it's not like a first cousin. It's one of them, I don't know, second cousin three times removed or something like that. But I remember forgetting that film first aired on terrestrial TV. Kids, you just don't know what that is.
So you had to actually be in on time to watch it.
And you had to have the aerial set at different angles for different channels. And I will never forget when In the Name of the Father, the day after it came on TV, and I went into school and I got slayed. I got Giuseppe. That was my nickname. It was called Giuseppe. Like, what? You know, and then I'm walking out the front door with Jerry for years at school. That's all I got.
Fair enough.
And it was like, oh, Christ almighty.
I feel like I've said one of your trigger words.
But no, do you want to know a really interesting fact about that film?
Go for it.
One of the main plot lines is the relationship between Jerry Conlon and Paul Hill.
Mm.
Do you know in real life the two of them never met?
Really?
Yeah.
They were lifted separately,
but it was one of those things that's what they would do back in the day. They would just literally lift people and just fabricate confessions and all that stuff. They never met. And obviously Paul Hill famously went on to marry one of the Kennedys.
That's true.
And has the most annoying accent in the history of the world. He was on Spotlight a few years ago. And it's like, Jesus.
Is it a Graham McDowell, that kind of thing? He's been in America for a while.
It's worse. It's worse than that. It's almost like Graham McDowell's doing an impression of him.
Fair enough.
It's an appalling accent.
See, when I lived in Toronto, I met a guy who had left Belfast in like 1973, but his accent was really funny.
No.
Because Canadians have a cute accent, and then that rammed into the middle of a Belfast accent was very... I was like, this is entertainment value, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I loved it. But no, we have... I mean, covering from your musical stuff. That's so weird, because in my school, whenever I started learning drums when I was 16. Because obviously, when I was... I remember my music teacher saying, do you ever play an instrument? And I was like, I played violin when I was younger. And he was like, would you take it back up again? I was like, no, the scar is still there. No, the mental scar is still there. I was like, well, what about something else? What about guitar or something? And I was like, I wasn't really into music even properly until I was about 16. I'm a big football head. From where I'm from, it was just like, play football. I've got three brothers. We all play football. So that was just kind of it. And then... A mate of mine, I started working in Dunn's, and a mate of mine, Stevie Miller, who's still a very good friend of mine to this day, we were just chatting the first day we met, and he was like, so what sort of music are you into? Steve was a big punk and a metaler. Mm. Like, what music are you into? I goes, do you know why I don't really listen to music? And he went, what? I suppose my brother likes like Oasis and Britpop and stuff, but I don't even own a CD. And he was like, I'll see you tomorrow. And he went away, and came back in the next day with this stack of CDs, even about 20 CDs. And it was everything from like Bad Religion to Slipknot to who else was it? Idlewild, NoFX. I just went, take them away with you. And I was like, okay. I took them home and started listening to them. And then within about 2 weeks, I bought a drum kit. I was like, I'm going to do this. Now, the thing was, when I was in school and I went to my teacher and was like, because I didn't do music for my GCSEs, but I went to the guy who hadn't seen me since third year. I was like, do you have a drum kit in the music department? And he was like, yeah. I was like, can I stay after school and do it and have a go?
Yeah.
And he was like, aye, sure. So a guy called Dick Barton, but he was just really happy to have anybody interested in anything.
I think with my school, the thing about it was, it's the classical music. See, the music department was renowned. The orchestra that used to... We did... When I was 16 or 17, and we did the BBC Youth Proms at the Albert Hall. And we were the only... So it was basically like the youth orchestra's model of the UK... And when I say youth orchestras, I mean like county youth orchestras. So you maybe have a pool of like, I don't know, 500,000 kids who could audition, kind of a thing. But we were a school orchestra where everybody came from the Anton Road, North Belfast, basically. And we were selected to go and play at this thing. And it was an incredible thing. Like Bob Holness, God rest his soul, was the compar.
Fuck.
I know, please, Bob. He was such a nice man as well. And that was an amazing experience, but because the classical music route seemed to benefit the school, it obviously brought financial interest, the investment and things like that there, and media coverage and things like that. It was like, well, it's classical music and that's the end of it. So I'd never had an exposure to anything else unless I went out and found it myself. And to be fair, Queen was like a natural progression.
Yeah.
You know, with the rock opera stuff, and then things like Rat Pack because of... the big band stuff. I was like, yeah, so that all the music I discovered as a kid was like naturally just anything related to classical. That's where it all came from. Like, since then, obviously, now I play all sorts of madness. Like, you know, I play Sugar Babes on stage, for God's sake.
I was gonna say,
I always wonder about that, if my violin teacher was to walk in now at a gig,
would he take it off?
I'm on stage, but I push the button. No joke, that is one of our most like well loved songs to play. People lose their mind, and it's always the lads are singing it. You're like, how do you know the words to this? Why is everyone a Sugar Babes fan? What happened there? You know.
Oh, but there's been so many members of the Sugar Babes.
I know, it's like which combination is it?
More
it's
members like, in the IRA.
I know, it's like, can you play Galway Girl? No, but wait till you hear this.
Yeah, I like that. That's something I do want to get to, but I just thought that was quite funny when you said like the school orchestra was everybody from like North Belfast and the Anton Road. I was just thinking of a really low budget version of Fame.
Definitely loads of class of homosexuals. Yeah.
Wee Dickie coming down the road with tuba.
Yeah, I swear to God, I'm not lying here. One of the lads who was in the orchestra, and he was in my class at school, John Brown, he was a flautist, and he was an incredible flautist. He didn't start learning, I think, until we were like in third year. And by fifth year, he became a virtuoso. He was an unbelievable player.
Right.
And then he ended up joining the RAF and then became the leader of the band that does the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace.
And he's from North Belfast?
He's from Green Island, but yeah.
That's so random.
Isn't it metal? Crazy, like some of the stories I can tell you, which, yeah, I'll be for another podcast, but
yeah, I'd probably never on a podcast. Have you do you see behind them? Yeah. Do you ever hear the Boston tapes? You don't want to get messed up.
I'll be me cancelled. But yeah, no, that was, yeah, it was so, it's so funny, like, to think that that wee school orcs, honestly, playing in the Albert Hall, and it's one of those ones I wish I had. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I wish I'd like taken it in a wee bit more, because it's the fucking Albert Hall. I don't know if I'll ever get to play there. Like the Ulster Hall, I've played in the Ulster Hall about maybe 200 times in my life.
Yeah.
It was one of those, it was a regular thing. I went to the Belfast School of Music and the school orchestra in Somalis, so it was the place where you always played. So it's like, I mean, I'm really happy for all the comedians getting to do the Ulster Hall and selling out and all, but I'm just like, I've played it hundreds of times. Do you know what I mean? Never by myself, granted.
Big deal, lads, big fucking.
I know, I mean, I maybe did like a 10-minute solo by myself, but there, I don't think 2,000 people were there just for me.
That's all right. No. Actually, speaking of virtuoso players and fantastic solos, I was gutted this week because Neil Peart from, or Neil Peart, depending on where you're from in the country, from Rush passed away.
Saw that.
A guy who made a drum kit sound like a guitar or a piano. Yeah, so much going on.
Drummers get a bad rap. I mean, I always remember like hearing jokes like, how do you know the stages level? The drummer's drilling on both sides of his mouth and all. But honestly, drummers, try drumming and then sling off a drummer. Do you know what I mean?
I played for years and I'm just like, here you go.
It's like, we can all drive a car, but Jesus Christ, it's harder than, it's the coordination between your hand and your feet. I do that sometimes. There's a, Vic Firth, the guys who make like the drumsticks and stuff there. So they, if you go on their YouTube channel, they have like an artist focus playlist, and different drummers from different bands perform those. But it's, the camera is solely on the drummer, and they've got like three or four angles just on the drummer.
You have a kick drum mic,
and actually watching how they play, and I sit there at all. I don't know how you do that. I don't find the violin as impressive. As drumming, I swear to God, I find.
I think there's a lot more melody we had. You can create a lot more than words.
Like, don't get me wrong, like, violin's not an easy instrument to play.
Definitely not.
I think it's said it's the hardest to master. I mean, there's no frets on it. So I have people approach me all the time asking me to teach them, and I'm like, no. Like, why not? I'm like, for a start, you're too old. Oh, that's ageist. No, it's not ageist. You have to understand something. You're in your 30s.
Yeah.
You have a lot of shit in your head just from living. See, when you're 5 or 6 or 7,
blank canvas.
You're empty and you're a sponge. So you can teach a kid. Because if you're trying to teach somebody how to know something's in tune or not, that's a hard thing to do. And you can't teach an adult. I just say to people, no, it is. Go buy a guitar. In a day, you'll be able to play Wonderwall. Just do that. If you want to play music, I said a violin is, and then, oh no, I want to play. Some guy came to me at a gig once and said, a fair play to him. But he said, could you play the theme tune to Schindler's List? And I said, yeah. He says, would you? And I went, mate, it's a Saturday night. I'm not playing the theme tune to Schindler's List. Everybody will be fucking hanging themselves. But I said, it is a beautiful piece of music. And he says, yeah, my wife bought me a violin because I want to learn how to play that. And I say, are you mental? I was like, do you have any idea how long it's going to take you to get to a standard? Like, it took me maybe 6 or 7 years as a child to get the standard where
playing
I can play
all
that
the
sort
time.
Of stuff. And that, yeah, that's it. Practicing every single day as an adult. I was like, can you commit 3 or 4 hours a day to practicing? He was like, no. I said, well, then you're never gonna learn. It's not a case of, well, it took me 5 or 6 years to get to that standard, so as an adult it's gonna take you 20. No, you can't just do like a half an hour a day. You literally need to train yourself for
Here's an idea. Why don't you, what you should do is, people, if you don't play an instrument, Go and learn to play something that sounds impressive but is actually easy to play.
Yeah, get a Casio keyboard and just press one of the functions. Before lip syncing was.
No, I was going to say, just learn to play the wee piano break in Dancing Queen by ABBA. So just so people think you can play piano, all you have to learn is did-in, 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 that's it. Or the guitar solo from Easy by the Commodores.
Do you know the theme tune to the Rugrats is probably the easiest thing to teach anyone to play? It's all in thirds, so all you do is you just pick. If you didn't see, so basically if you play on all the whites and you start with a C and an E and you just basically go bum 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 and just do that.
Yeah.
Those thirds all the way up. That's it.
That's the
Rugrats theme tune. It is the easiest thing. It's easier than chopsticks.
Oh, fair enough. So that's,
do you know what I mean?
Piano 101. I know. I have a friend of mine, Orla Rice. She's a fantastic musician. She plays double bass, cello, piano. She's a brilliant bass player, actually. I remember seeing her. It was the first time I'd seen like a girl play bass in a band.
Oh.
And that's how we became friends. So I was like, that is so cool.
Yeah.
Because it was just all the sweaty teenagers. Hey,
I know.
I'm in a band. And then Orla was like, what's happening? And she had a fucking cool Ernie Ball bass. And I was like, where'd you get that from? She was like, well, I play all the time.
People say, oh, bass players or the guitarists never make it. And I'm like, no, bass players are the clever ones.
No.
Because there's no focus on, because yeah, you often think bass players are actually better than the lead guitarist.
Yeah.
Not always, but in bands I've played and people I know, bass players are phenomenal. And they're just like, you know what? I've been doing this for years. I'd rather just sit at the back and just relax. I don't want, you know, that's what it is.
Orla's a teacher, but she's also classically trained. Yeah. So, and she's got a music degree, and people are just like, oh, fucking bass player. I'm just like, yeah, but she knows what she's playing. I was like, yeah. A guitar player was like, I learned this by ear. And she was like, here's the sheet music.
I'm like,
this is more impressive, because I remember trying to learn sheet music.
That's funny, you know, whenever me and Gavin try and approach a song, and if it's either an original composition or if it's a cover, especially if it's a cover. Because I'm classically trained, I can read music and I know all the theory, whereas he's self-taught. Now, he's a very accomplished fingerstyle guitarist, but he's self-taught. So trying to find a common language between the two of us to go, I've had to sort of almost like relearn everything I knew, and then, but he's learned, I feel like I can almost sit him down with like a theory exam. Maybe not like the highest of levels, but like, you know, one of the grades that I would have done at school. And actually give it to him and go, and I feel like he would actually pass the test, you know, because it's just the stuff that he has learned just from me and him playing together for the last couple of years.
So funny, because I, like, one of the other connections that always brings me back on the podcast is I went to Tech with Gavin years ago.
Yes.
In Belfast, Met. And I remember him coming in. I think he had a banjo at that
point.
Yeah, a banjo and a guitar.
He started with tenor banjo. That was how he started.
Yeah, but he was like, I play a banjo. And I was like, I play
drums. I've never seen him play banjo.
No. But I think it was then he got the guitar. Yeah. And he was just mucking around one day, and I was like, are you really learning that? He was like, yeah, I'm doing it wrong. And he was brilliant.
He learned by watching.
Yeah, because all the guys we knew that played guitar were all just playing power chords and rock.
Mm.
So it was just like, I'm like, that sounds cool because you're playing a big distorted guitar, but this man sitting in the corner, I'm just like, that looks very complicated.
It's funny. It's so funny. Like,
because he's a lethal guitar player.
He is. And it's really funny because when we play our gigs, he has to dumb down what he does to play our cover stuff, because
there's only three chords in a pop song.
Yeah, that's it. So people be like, a lot of the focus, I get a lot of the shame because I'm doing all the flashy solo stuff with the pedal board.
Yeah.
And people think he has a stomp box. When we play dance music, people think he has a stomp box. He doesn't. He just knows how to make his guitar sound like a drum kit.
Yeah.
So he's able to,
while he's playing.
He has showed me how he does it, and I just go.
I've seen him doing that.
There's very, I know, like, some of the guys who mix sort of in our circle are like pretty well known around the world in the fingerstyle guitar world. And they always say, like, I don't know how he does that. And they can't wrap their head around his technique and how he basically turns his guitar into that. Basically, that electronic drum kit, it's mental how he does it.
Yeah,
and
he deals a lot in like harmonics and it's slapping.
Yeah, well, it's in the
body,
from the movement of when he hits the kick on the bridge to where. So if he's gonna kick on the bridge and then with the upstroke he'll pluck on a string, but before he's plucked, he's already done two different movements with his hand. So he's getting that digga 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 digga, you know, and all that. But he's mashing all that together.
It's like the hi-hat.
And I don't know how he does it, but it's great crack. But when we do our fingerstyle stuff, he actually is probably more, he gets more of the focus because it's more about, I just season.
Yeah.
That's all I'm there for, you know.
A couple of accoutrements.
But yeah. But it's funny. My favourite thing about playing with Gavin is, anybody listening to this who knows him knows what he looks like. Big dude, massive beard, tattoos. He's a lovely fella, but if you didn't know him, he'd look like a scary dude.
Mm.
But he plays with fake nails. So on his right hand, so we're going to work, I'd be driving, and he's sitting in the car putting his nails on.
It's quite funny.
And then he clips them, files them down. So on his right hand, he is basically, it works like he's five plectrums. That's how it would work. Because he just doesn't have the time to grow his nails. So the length that he wants them, so he just uses fake. So when we go to Superdrug, he goes up and buys the big packet of nails and goes to the counter, and the guy behind the desk is always like, I always stand back and just watch, just to see that reaction of,
did your missus send you in?
but people would shake, come up and shake his hand and then look at his hand and go,
that's a crack. Yeah.
And they're getting all judgy and like, no, that's how he plays. He needs, because you know, he can't use a pick to do what he does because it's fingerstyle. You can't play fingerstyle guitar with a plectrum.
That's very true. What have you got coming up? Because I mean, obviously, I'm sure you were absolutely mental over Christmas.
Christmas didn't look like it was going to be busy, and then all of a sudden, the amount of emails we were getting, like,
are you free
to a staff party? And you're like, why are you leaving us so late? But we weren't complaining, it was good money to get. But yeah, big ones coming up. Actually, after I leave here, I'm going to the First Trust on University Street, which is really funny because.
Because you're from North Belfast and you're going to a bank
yeah,
not to rob
it. No, because we actually play at their Christmas party. We didn't play at their, they were out in their party and then they came to see us play because I know a fellow who works in that branch and they came to see us and they were like, oh, can you give us a shout out? And I was like, no problem. So guys, shout out to the guys from First Trust at the back there on their Christmas day. You know, it's round of applause and you know. Now's your chance if you want a low rate mortgage, go and see them because they're all half cut. And people legit went and started like hounding them. Like, no, I was joking. But
yeah, they don't control mortgage rates, but thanks for
that. So that's that. And then go pick up some new speaker to pick up. And then we're playing in the Fitzwilliam at 5 o'clock. We've been playing there quite a lot recently. We do a cocktail hour there.
Oh, nice.
It's very chilled out, like turned down, just relax. It's like they do like two cocktails for a tenner, like 4 to 7 on a Friday. So yeah, that, and then the usual Saturday Madness, Sunday's Royal Rumble, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm not going, I'll just be sitting in the house with a pizza to carry it.
Fair enough.
And then yeah, next week's looking busy as well. Wasn't looking like a busy one, and then like I say, you open your emails and like gig, and I go, where'd that come from? So
it's good work though. It's nice when people are hunting you for the gig.
It's handy, and we get a lot of varied stuff. Like we do some corporate stuff. We go to London sometimes to do stuff for a medical supply company called Cerner, and like they'll basically go, right, we're having like an event on, you just come over, don't worry about booking a hotel, we've booked the top two floors in the Hilton, like, right, no sweat.
Yeah,
you know, so it's
we'd be the music and at the after party.
I know, but then you do that and then the next thing you're playing in some hole of a bar somewhere, and it's such a varied life. Yeah. you know yourself, like you've played some brilliant venues and then all of a sudden you're in somebody's living room doing a gig.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be so weird. I'm always fascinated
it's
by
it's a come down, like where you do like the Millennium Forum and then you do a bar in the corner to do an open mic.
We went to see Colin Gaddis the other week at the Odyssey, and friends of mine who were with us were going, oh, he must be so nervous, and I went, I bet he's not. I said, you know, when you get on, see, the bigger the stage and the more people, the easier actually is to do, and more often than not, you can't see anything because the lights are in your face. You can really maybe see the first couple of rows, but you can't really see anything. I always find if there's only a couple, if it's a small intimate thing, I get more nervous then.
Oh, you're really on to impress then, you see, because you're just like
because you can literally pick, like, I suppose as a comedian, you can literally go read people's faces, and then if somebody heckles you, like it's like if somebody heckles you and there's 4,000 people, it's. By the time it reaches you, you've already moved on to the next joke anyway.
Who cares?
But if you're in a room of 30 people, I can imagine that can be quite disconcerting. It was Billy Connolly once said, it's like doing stand-ups like a jigsaw. So you put all the pieces together, and then somebody heckles, and it breaks the jigsaw, and then you got to put it all back together again.
Oh, fair enough. I've never seen... Mm. That's a good analogy.
It's
when they kill your momentum.
What was it? He was talking about being back in Glasgow, and somebody shouted up about Celtic, and he went, yep, and I went to see Celtic too, and then somebody booed him. And he's like, what, you're booing me because I don't support your team? You sectarian cunt or something.
He said
like that. I was like, so I don't know if I'm going to swear on this, by the way.
You could swear away.
If I'd known, I would have sworn sooner.
I know. I should have said, I've been introducing shows in that. When I MC on the Farmer Michael tour, one of the things I always say is, look, guys, just let you know there will be some naughty language tonight. If you're offended by that, we're going to give you the next 5 minutes to fuck off.
Yeah.
So just a nice way. I'm gonna explain it in a funny way, but this is what's going to happen.
Ricky Gervais, as he says, people who hate the word cunt would hear it a lot less if they stopped acting like one.
Fair enough.
Or something like that, yeah.
The one of the things that I wanted to ask you, would your dream gig be in St. Pauli?
Do you know what? It might be.
We'll give a bit of background to this. If you don't know who St. Pauli are, they're a football team from Hamburg in Germany. They're the socialist footballers, aren't they?
Yeah, they're the greatest football club in the world, but the worst football team.
That's what it is.
That's your that's context, because as a club, they're amazing.
Whenever you're travelling around the world, you will see St. Pauli stickers everywhere. And there's St. Pauli fan clubs. Mick has got a St. Pauli water bottle here. I stayed across the road from their stadium years ago, and they had like a... I think it was like a bar.
Please tell me it was a Hotel Budapest. It was a Jolly Roger. A
hostel above it?
Yeah.
We just went in there for a beer.
That's the Jolly Roger.
Check this out. We went in for a beer and we were sleeping in the van on the tour. I was on tour with the Dangerfields working as a roadie.
All right, cool.
And we were in there and we went in we just to get warm and get a couple of beers because the local beer was like €2 a bottle. It was gorgeous.
Oh, mate, it's gone down since then. 180 Astra.
Is it? I was drinking it anyway. And then the young lady behind the bar was like, where are you from? Blah, blah, blah. She says, we're on tour. She's like, oh, you guys staying in the area? She says, we're probably sleeping in a van on an alleyway. And she was like, no, that won't do. She went away off and made a phone call and came back. And she was like, I've got his rooms upstairs. Take a room. And I was like, no, we're like a touring punk band. We can't afford rooms. That's why we're keeping in the van. She was like, don't worry about it. And they just let us stay. They're really, really, they're very community-based. They do a lot.
If you're unemployed, your tickets for the match are cheaper. The homeless are not employed as such, but like on match day, so like everyone's drinking out of plastic cups. They're branded plastic cups as well. I always take about 20 home with me every time because they've all got different designs on them.
Okay.
But like homeless people, obviously people just discard their rubbish. So the homeless people go around with a trolley and pick up all the plastics, bring them back to the stadium, and the stadium will give them money for clean up. You know, that's the way that as a community St. Pauli works. It's unbelievable. They're very left wing. Recently listed as a terrorist organization as well.
I saw you posted that up. How did that happen? There's a lot of people with beards like this football team.
I don't know. It was something. So the counter-terrorist department, or whatever you want to call them, for Met Police, I think it was, basically introduced for like teachers and nurses and people in the public sector, like that. Basically a list of logos of things to look out for. As my tweet was like CTU's got really gone down the drain since Jack Bauer left.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like I couldn't get over the madness. Like green, like the Greenpeace is on there, like the Socialist Party, like Unite the Unions on. It's like what the, these are just people just like wanting like, you know, fair wages for nurses and stuff like that there. And it's like, how the hell are they? And so St. Pauli's on there. Like don't get, there's also a right wing.
Yeah,
list as well, but it's like it's because in America as well, you've got that the whole Antifa thing is gone. In Portland, especially, there are some Antifa groups who have been violent, but it's like generally speaking, like I just love St. Pauli just because of it teaches tolerance. I got into it because my friends coach kids football, and they basically were trying to teach the kids about tolerance, and so it led them to learn about a club in Glasgow called Glasgow United Glasgow, who are heavily linked with St. Pauli. So they're like, oh, St. Pauli, and basically it ended up on six of us going there for a weekend and getting drunk and watching football.
Hamburg's a hell of a town, like
it's unbelievable.
And I want to talk about the St. Pauli thing because
On the pitch actually. I have played on the pitch.
Have you?
We did a stadium tour. I brought my violin with me the last time. No, the first time we went, I've been like three or four times, actually going back in a few weeks, brought my violin with me on the stadium tour, and basically said to the tour guide, can I play on the pitch? And he's like, look, you can't stand on the pitch, but you can basically, you're pitch side. So there's a video of me somewhere playing very drunkenly in minus 12 conditions, Hell's Bells by ACDC.
I think what's very funny as well about St. Pauli is they're a worldwide famous football team. Yeah. Their stadium's knackered.
It is, it's still sold out over 30,000 every week.
Yeah,
it's amazing. It's not all standing, but a good part of it's standing. Levi's actually have a music school in it for refugee kids. So one of the corporate boxes is owned by Levi's, and so they. I've been in it because the guy who works for Levi's, who runs it, invited us over and said to me, the next time you're over, let me know. And if you bring your violin with you, I'll get you and your friends hospitality tickets.
Sweet.
And if you basically entertain my clients while I'm there, I'm like, yeah, man, no problem. Full, massive, big amps. There's a drum kit. There's guitars. There's a piano. But whenever it's not match day, which is 6 out of the 7 days of the week, it's a music school for refugee kids.
That's really
and
cool.
Underprivileged. It's yeah, so that's the whole. There also used to be a brothel in the stadium, but that's neither here nor there.
Hamburg, biggest red light district in Europe.
Yeah, it's quite a sight.
The St. Pauli or the.
Never mind. It's alright, I have no woman to answer to. I can say that.
That's alright. No, I just wanted to tie it up with something you're into. I thought we'd stop boring people with our music nerdiness.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing time. I highly recommend it. But that's the thing as well. Like, we go and it's like €40 for your flights.
Yeah.
The accommodation's really cheap, the beer's really cheap. You know, go on a night out in Belfast and you drop £150 and you end up in a fight and you end up marmorous. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the highlight of your night. So yeah, I can never eat at Ops ever again.
No, we have. Sure. I just thought that was worth saying. Whenever people look outside that, I've started doing that. Like, I went the last 2 years. I went traveling in January because people are like, "I'm going on my holidays in July." I'm like, "The weather's all right in July. Go in January when it's depressing as fuck."
But that's a funny thing. You see, being in Germany in like snow -12, and everybody just gets all with it.
Yeah.
And there's a drop of rain in Belfast and people start driving like maniacs.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I used to live in Canada and they would laugh at us when they would say, "Do you get much snow?" And I'm like, "Not really." But when we do get some, the country shuts down.
My granddad has more snow on his shoulder. That's just from his dandruff.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, where they're operating full airports and snowstorms and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, it's really funny though, because going to some hollies led us to other clubs. So we, last year, went to see, it's the same squad of lads, went to see Rayo Vallecano, who are the third team in Madrid. Also very left wing and also shit.
Yeah.
They're like a really poor quality. Actually, the day we went to see them on the last day of the season and they got relegated to Liga Segunda. They're absolute atrocious. But then as a club, like, the players are amazing. It's almost like a slum area of Madrid where their stadium's based. We went to the local bar for a beer before the game, and it was like, one of the boys was like, "Have you seen the toilets?" "No." I'm not joking. It was a hole in the ground.
Yeah.
If you wanted to take a shit, you just squatted away. It was a disgrace. Proper slum area. But there was a woman, an old woman who lived in the area, who was being kicked out because I think like the owner of the building, I don't know, put a rent up or something like that, and the players found out about it. So the player bought her flat for her. It's not, you know, like, it's so. I love hearing stories like that.
They're a community organization, yeah, as well as a football. But I think.
But they're also like the football club built on like 6 month loans and stuff like that. There's no real consistency. That's why clubs like that never go anywhere, because they can't. They have no. Because that's the thing. If you're gonna be left wing and socialist, you're never gonna make any money.
That's true.
You know, so you become a victim of your beliefs. But it's, you know, if you choose to live that way, you choose to live that way.
I think from hearing from that kind of stuff, is it's really cool, because then, especially in those poor areas, or especially in like a town like Hamburg, which is very punk and socialist, which is, I like that. That's what I'm into myself. I think it's cool because then it becomes sort of self-propelling.
Mm-hmm.
The club looks after the community. The community goes to the game every week.
Yeah.
As you say, St. Pauli's sold out every game.
Yeah,
and absolutely. To watch a brutal football team.
But having said that, actually, the last game I went in September or October, I actually went to the Derby against Hamburg.
Oh, big one.
And it's such a weird experience, because like in the Hamburg end, there was like no surrender flags and stuff.
They have like ultras and stuff, don't they?
Well every club.
They're right wing, aren't they?
So the last couple of times I've been in with the ultras.
Yeah.
In St. Pauli, and you're not allowed to use your phone, you can't take any pictures and stuff. They're all very big on their privacy and stuff. But at the other end of the stadium is the Hamburg ultras. I swear, like, Rangers fans go over to see Hamburg.
Hamburg, yeah.
It's so weird how Celtic and Rangers have this St. Pauli-Hamburg connection. Excuse me. And so St. Pauli won. It was it was actually a really great game. And the Hamburg fans, in an effort to get the match stopped, because the match, like, it has happened before, because Fleurs always go on the pitch.
Yeah.
I'll show you a photo I've got from when I was last there. But the players, or the Hamburg fans, were firing Fleurs into the St. Pauli fans.
Right.
In an effort to get the referee to stop the match. But then what happens is the Hamburg captain jumps the barrier and goes up into the ultras, and he's like, "Here, catch yourselves on." You know, so like,
yeah.
And the St. Pauli captain, he would do the same. He would go and, okay. But the weirdest thing, half time, I go for a piss in the toilet, because that's where you go piss. Standing there, and there's guys putting balaclavas on. And like I said, I'm from Ardoyne, I grew up in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
But
nothing good. I was like,
why? I'm standing here, like, there's people putting balaclavas on. And then when you went back out, you realise why, because they were the ones with the bazookas firing the flare onto the pitch. And it was like, because obviously they were going to be seen.
Yeah.
And so they had to cover their faces. And then, but you knew who they were because they were standing beside you. You're like, where's that guy again? And then all of a sudden they come back and then you sort of notice a little snood that they'd have, because that's, they'd have it underneath. And
yeah.
Pull it up. Bizarre experience, but I highly recommend it. Anybody who wants to see an atmosphere. And that's the thing, one of my mates came with us, who's a devout Celtic fan, and he's like, I've been to Old Firms, but nothing compares to that atmosphere. It is mental. Because the tunnel that they walk down literally has that Skull and Crossbones logo.
Yeah.
And they play Hell's Bells by AC/DC as you walk out, and there's all the red flares. So for the opposition team coming out, it's unnerving, like.
Yeah.
And you get goosebumps. I'm wearing a hoodie and I've got goosebumps talking about it. It's unbelievable place.
I thought we'd do that there. I thought it'd be a good idea to end the podcast on that, because all you're talking about, like, St. Pauli have been branded as like a terrorist organisation. You do realise we've just recorded a podcast with a man from North Belfast and a man from South Armagh. So enjoy your time in the watch list, Mike.
Oh, Jesus Christ, mate. I can't wait to see Newsnight in 20 years time. This is where it all started.
We'll do the socials to let you get out. So guys, mine, Darren Matthews Comedy, if I'm on the Instagram, like, share and subscribe to the podcast, which is Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends. Mick, I'll let you finish up. What's yours? If people are wanting to check out the String Ninjas and your own stuff.
String Ninjas are at String Ninjas. That's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tinder, Grindr, Bebo, MySpace, Ancestry.org, Friends Reunited.
LinkedIn.
Teletext, right next to the Bamboozle Quiz. Catch Our Live Special, Extra Vision Close to You.
Lovely. So, at String Ninjas, that's the whole thing?
That's all you need to know. And yeah, if you can't pronounce it, well, that's not my problem.
Yeah, they're rubbish ninjas too. They make loads of noise.
Actually, we were meant to be called Fat Hatchbacks.
I'm going to go with String Ninjas on that one.
Actually, we didn't give ourselves a name. Somebody else gave it to us. He was like, I want to hire you to play. What's your name? So we're like, Mick and Gavin. He went, no, I need something for a poster. And we're like, make something up. So he called us String Ninjas. And then he sacked us. We never played the gig. So we were like, so in the divorce, we got the name. So there you go.
Right, so String Ninjas, Mick, what's your own?
Oh, Violin Mick.
It's easy to remember.
You know what I mean? Like, not Mick Conlon.
Not Mick Conlon. That will take you to
the boxer.
A lad from West Belfast is great shape.
Fuck off.
No problem. Right, Mick, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
No sweat, mate.
Have fun.
Thanks for the coffee.
You're more than welcome. Right, folks, I will be back hopefully next week. I have a few recordings lined up. I have a gig tomorrow night in McCooey's, my comedy club, the biggest wee comedy club in the north. But it's sold out, so I'm afraid you can't go to that one. If you are about, though, on Sunday, there is a bushfire relief trivia with a bit of gig. I'm doing a bit of stand-up at it, and I'll be hosting for the bushfire relief in Australia. That's in the Black Box. Find that online. And then next Sunday, I'm launching the new night of my Sunflower Comedy Club. That's being launched with an awesome charity gig for Marie Curie. So we have a brilliant lineup with guys like Mark McCarney, James McKegney, William Thompson, Jordan Robinson, Bronan Diamonds on, Cormac McDermott, and myself. Hopefully I haven't forgotten anybody in that lineup. £8 a ticket, guys. Find it on Eventbrite, Sunflower Comedy Club, Belfast. And hopefully see us there, because it's all for a great cause. And by great cause, I mean I'm going to get steaming. But in the aid of helping a charity.
I'm going to be there too.
Did you get your tickets?
Oh, I'm it.
Good luck.
Get it came out. I'm committed. Right.
We will see you there. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to the podcast again. Take care and enjoy your day. Thank you.